Hi everyone, Mick again with an update on the event that we've been talking about planning for some time. Firstly, we're really sorry it's come down to the wire and we're just nailing this down. We've had a couple of snags in the process as we've been trying to kind of work this thing out. So first off, we're looking at the 6th of February. Now, I know that we let it slip out there that it was going to be the 7th for a short amount of time. In fact, on this very episode, we had to relaunch it due to some technical issues. And in the meantime, we found out we had some problems with schedules and blah, blah, blah. What's been going on is we've both been traveling heavily. And I'm not just kind of talking not being able to connect. Dobbo's been on the other side of the world, away from cell phone service. It's been kind of crazy. Well, he's always on the other side of the world, but in any case, you get the point. We just connected literally about an hour ago. He was in Sydney Airport. He's lost his bags. He's annoyed with Virgin Airlines. And we talked it through anyway. What we've got the 6th of February nailed down. And what we want to do is we're going to schedule it in Port Melbourne in Victoria. So sorry for you international listeners. Maybe next time we can catch up. But if you're in town, you're around, and you're available, we're hoping that Friday might work given the short notice. I think it'll kind of be a little bit better than the Saturday. We're just looking forward to connecting with as many folks as we can. But what we need you to do is reach out to us as soon as possible via Twitter, at Risk Failure. You can do it via Facebook messaging. You could do it via email. I think our email is mick@riskingfailure.com or dobbo@riskingfailure.com. You can do it however you need to. You can do it through the website at the voicemail icon there. We just want to hear from you if you're thinking or you'd like to come, but just need to get a quick head count so we can nail down where in Port Melbourne we're going to do this. So reach out to us and let us know. And that way we'll get a real quick indication and we can finalize the actual location and we'll release that. But definitely 7 p.m. on February the 6th. Once again, we know it's short notice. Hoping you can make it. And looking forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, we hope that 2015 has been off to a cracking start for you. Let's jump into this week's episode.
Hello, welcome to Risking Failure. This is your host, well, half of your host, Mark Dobson. I'm in Australia, Mick Dunn on the other side of the planet, my good friend. We touch base every Friday and have an honest conversation around growth. Today, the epic topic will be listening. Those people who haven't noticed me mentioned before, Mick is deaf in one ear, so this is a difficult subject for us.
Speaking of listening, mate, the I don't know what it is, but the Geelong to Shepparton flight that goes over your house every time that we talk is on its way again. I can hear every time I'm talking to you, it sounds like it's a World War One bomber like fading off in the distance somewhere. It's great.
So this week I turned one of my cupboards into a recording studio because you can record well, but I wanted to just get the quality a little bit better because I've just recorded an old book that I wrote a long time ago. It's been revised, Rise Above, which is typically for teenagers, but I get good feedback from all sorts of adults as well. But I made it into an audio book, but I was recording it at home because you just don't need to go to a studio anymore. But that, it was like there was a helicopter just doing laps around my house and it didn't matter how much noise proofing I did. It would just shake. And I was like, it's so mad. I was so mad. But it went all day. Cause I did it all. It took me 4 days to do this damn book. And I'd come out and I'd be shaking my arms at the sky going, who can I call to say, can you do your goddamn army drill, flight, helicopter training, police training, whatever it is, do it somewhere else. But there's no one to call. And it was so
It's amazing how much like, yeah. And when you got that stuff going on, like your body starts to tense up. You're like harboring all of this energy that you just want to release. Like when you like come out of that, I had the same thing when I did an interview recently for Sustainacast. I hit record and no less than a minute into it in my mill building, somebody freaking three floors down started doing hammer drilling into the masonry that was just echoing through the entire building. And it was just this rumbling, grinding noise going off every probably 45 seconds to a minute. It'd be like this, just such an annoying sound. And I was trying to manage my interview around it because we were like, it went away. And then 30 minutes later, it came back again. So then all of a sudden, you're trying to manage what you're saying so that the silent bits are when you're talking and the noisy bit there. Oh, my goodness. Once I got done with that, I was just ready to scream.
Maybe the only people that really appreciate this It's probably two. No, it's probably three times. Either if you're recording, if anybody out there has done recordings, you will appreciate the frustration noise. If you have a baby that you've just gotten to sleep, you may also appreciate that. And third, if you're trying to sleep and the neighbors have got a party and you're always wondering, is this the last song? I reckon. So not everybody will be able to relate to me to us recording, but they'll probably be able to relate to one of those.
I think those are spot on. That's great. Well, this is a different listening topic. Yeah, I wanted to share something that I just was having a conversation with somebody recently, and somebody I'd never met before. So it wasn't like a friend or an acquaintance necessarily or a relative or anything like that, but just somebody I ran into and...
It was a police officer and they pulled you over.
No.
Okay.
But we're just talking about like what we're working towards and what we do. And I just felt like I couldn't get a word in. And at the same time as that, I was genuinely trying to dig to find out what this person not just does for a living, but what their cause is, like what their why is, if you want to say, you know, call it that, like what it all comes down to. And I was finding that very difficult, but I was listening very as intently as I could. I mean, I was sharing and responding and chiming in on stuff I thought in relation to theirs, but it was like one of these conversations, like every time I did kind of jump in and share a thought, it just like the conversation began to spiral in a whole new direction. And it was just covering, like it was just going all over the place. And I, by the time I got done, I just sort of felt like I had really tried hard to listen and was waiting for the time when it would reciprocate back. And like just listening to that whole law of seek first to understand, then to be understood. I don't feel like I ever hit that. And it was interesting because upon reflection on it a few days later, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting because that really just didn't work in that situation. And I just didn't feel like I was able to connect. I just felt like we were two people that were interested in similar things, but just on completely different wavelengths, which was fine, I guess. It wasn't like a judgmental thing. I really tried hard and it just didn't work.
That's a tricky one, isn't it? Where, because I had that experience in a bar one time ages ago. Oh my God, it was so interesting. And it was a really bad engagement party, and the people getting married had sort of looked like they were about to break up, and then they took off, and then there was nobody really there. We were waiting for them to come back to the function. And then, so I ended up talking to this girl, and it was the only conversation really available. The bar was, it was just odd. Anyway, so she was talking. So I listened, like you might've been on that occasion. And I just thought, oh, well, you know, it's, just, you know, she's not that interesting, but, you know, whatever. Just be polite, Mark. Listen. And she took my listening as in, I don't think anybody had ever listened to her before. So she suddenly thought, oh, my God, this guy's amazing. Now, I hadn't done anything. So I eventually got out of the conversation and I went to the bar and I was just standing there with a couple of people. Finally, some people arrived and just chatting. And then she came up a bit later and everybody's standing around me and I were leaning on the bar and then she sort of tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around and I couldn't go anywhere. She was standing right in front of me and my back was at the bar and either side of me was a bunch of boys. And she said, hey, I've got to go. She said, hey, here's my number. You should call me. I was shocked and everybody's looking and I just said, look, yeah, thanks. She goes, so, you will call me, right? You'll call me. No, I was like, yeah, like, and everybody's like, I'd become a spectacle. It was so freaking awkward. But once again, that was I listened to them, but they hadn't necessarily sought to understand me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I wonder whether, like, yeah, when you're talking about that, like, that person obviously felt understood. I don't know.
Maybe sure.
The person I was talking to felt understood and felt like this. I didn't feel that way in any way. Like, I just felt like we were on completely different wavelengths. But
so I wonder what energy he goes home in. Because I think there's a few things going on here. I think that if we took this listening to a high level, like a more, I don't know, look at the complexities of it, I think both of us have a role to be listening to what ourselves and what we think we should be contributing and what we think we should be saying. It's like when someone's got a bit of food on the edge of their mouth and we choose not to say it, but we can't hear a thing they're saying. because we're feeling so uncomfortable with the food that's on the corner of their mouth. And we've got a role to play in feeding back to somebody, you know, how they're impacting us. Because sometimes I also think, like I've noticed with Twitter, going on Twitter recently, there's just so much noise and nobody's listening. Everybody's like, check out my link, you know, check out this, come and like my Facebook page. And there's just noise. And there's a whole lot of people wanting attention, not necessarily listening to who actually has something that might serve them, like letting stuff in.
It's interesting. I heard somewhere along the lines, I saw a short thing about the guy that developed Twitter, and the beginnings of it was actually...
When you say short, was it just like 75 characters or something?
So it was something to do with, I don't know the whole backstory. There's probably other listeners here that know the whole thing, but I think as I understood it, he was listening to, he's working on other gadgets and things and design, whatever. And he was listening to the police and emergency. Like he had one of those devices that taps into the emergency radio systems. And he was hearing their short communications where they were just updating each other on their status of where they were, what they were doing. And he thought, wouldn't it be cool if people could just do this in general? It was just a status update, basically. And so it's funny because now I find myself looking at Twitter and I'm like, it's just anything but, I don't know. It's like meaningless stuff in that way that.
Well, there's so much noise. It's just noise. Yeah. And I think that in the conversation you're talking about with that person you're sitting with, it's like there was just noise. And I think this goes a little bit back to our vulnerability discussion. And then if I'm busy, if I just keep talking, if I just keep telling you the story that I've learned to regurgitate and tell over and over and over and over because I've learned that people like this story, I get a response from it, I feel safe, then that's what human interaction is. If I can pretend to you without actually really being honest about what is at my core, I'm not going to give you the chance or the opportunity, and I'm not even going to take the risks of even me listening to my core, acknowledging it. And I think we kind of get caught up in the candy of life, the sugar hit, the rather than the being the real deal. You know, I talk about this all the time, the authentic versus the perceived.
There was two things going on with it. There was ego, definitely. I kind of felt like I needed to just interject and say, like, I understand, like you don't have to prove to me yourself. Like I've contacted you to meet up with you because I respect what you do or have done, and I'm just intrigued by that. And so there was a little bit of that. But what I was finding is we were kind of talking more. It was kind of the more I listened, the more I felt like I was getting coached.
Yeah.
Have you had this before? You know, when the more you try to connect with somebody and then all of a sudden it's like, well, what you really need to do is this, and you're not doing enough of that, and you should consider looking at it this way. And it's like, but no, this is just a conversation. Like this is just, this would be just like you and I are having here. We're just sharing things, and it would be almost like it gets to the point where you're beginning to switch back to me and going, well, Mick, what you really need to do is like, you know, the following strategies and think more about the following. It's like, wait a minute. I'm not asking you for advice. I'm like exploring a topic with you.
Yeah, with an equal, but they're not seeing themselves as an equal. They're detaching and going, I will be your teacher or your mentor. And I had that with a girl I dated years ago. I think we only went on one date or something. We spoke to each other on the phone later, but she was a life coach. And a couple of times I said something and she tried to workshop me through it, you know, with her questions. And I really bit. I really bit back. And then she responded as if, oh, you know, you're getting a little bit stressed there. Like, where's that stress coming from? I was like, what? What? And then she said this. She goes, you know what? Look, I think that's enough for today. And I was like, hang on, what? I said, what friend says, I think that's enough for today? I said, you're not being my equal in any way.
I think I've said it to you once or twice on the podcast.
That's enough for today. So I was like, and this was where we've talked about another podcast about positioning. Like, where are you positioning yourself in the conversation? Yeah, totally. You know? And
that's what I mean. I think that was the issue I think that I was having was that what I felt like actually, because you don't know these things up ahead of time, but as the discussion and the conversation was rolling out, I realized that at some level, some kind of framework needed to be laid out before we began a conversation to kind of explain the context of why we were connecting. But I was like, that seemed completely obvious to me, you know, in the way that you meeting and running into another life coach would be. That's like, well,
I'm not a life coach. Hang on. I'm not a life coach. I have to correct.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's really mean of me. I'm sorry.
I don't think you can get life right. That's why I do this. I'm exploring it. If you want to help, you want to win a medal or make a gazillion dollars, yeah, call me. But anyway, I'm just doing that for our listeners. I puke in my mouth when I get called a life coach. It's like,
yeah.
Okay. But, you know, if you said it, then everyone's going to go, well, Mick must know him. He knows. He's a life coach. He's been tricking us. But anyway, if I meet someone else in a coaching role, yes.
Another motivational speaker.
Yeah. You bastard. Yeah. Yeah. Just like when you meet someone else that's got a boring job.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks. So when you're in, you know, meeting with somebody, just like you mentioned, in a similar industry, doing similar work, it's like it shouldn't, you just think that shouldn't, that framework doesn't need to be laid out. Like you're not like contacting them for advice. It's like a lawyer to a lawyer. They don't like school each other, but some of them might. I mean, they probably argue the law. I don't know. But this would be the kind of, I don't know. There's a few areas of this that I think get particularly heated. And I've noticed this within my own industry. For example, in the world of environmental stuff, people have very passionate views on that. And sometimes you can get stuck in spiraling conversations that are going nowhere. And religion's another one, where sometimes I feel like the rules don't quite apply the same way.
We're not really wanting to listen. We're trying to assert that our position, and you should think this same way, and let me teach you, or let me clarify you, or let me lead you because you're misguided.
Let me clarify your position for you.
Yeah, let me tell you how it actually is. Yeah, it's extraordinary. And in those, especially with religion, there's not a lot of listening going on.
Mm. This is probably a good example of the space where I've run into what I would categorize as the style of conversation I felt like I fell into the other day, where I felt like I was trying to just be a good listener and it just was coming out non-productive. It wasn't a heated discussion or anything. I just sort of felt like I wasn't doing a good job of figuring out how to guide through to sort of be productive in the conversation. But I would say a supercharged version of that would be many conversations I've been in on the topic of religion where,
so many. Yeah. Because I've gone in and actually deliberately studied different religions, and I've spent huge amounts of times in different cultures and in different faiths and understood them and really listened. And some of them were just very grateful that I was actually taking the time to understand and be part of their community and look at it in a sincere way. And others were just going, oh, we can get him to come across and he's lost. You know, it kills me when someone tells me I need to be saved. I'm like, oh, I feel like things are all right. I didn't invent a rule that I could go to hell. So, you know, like, I think in relationship, both parties need to be listening. And I think that, you know, as much as you were taking on your role, he was taking on his role. But I also think, you know, both parties can allow it. It's like two people have a standoff with a gun, like one got to put it down, but then will the other person? I also think that in a career, and I think it's with faith and lots of things too, the positioning comes down to that model we've talked about before, that about when you're young, you're the athlete and you just want to try anything. And then you become the warrior, and the warrior's going, I'm going to make this happen, and I've got this attitude, I'm going to bull my way through this. And then later you become the statesman. And when the statesman, you're really just happy to develop and share. You don't have to prove anything anymore. And if you cross paths with someone who's in a stage of their journey where they're the warrior, they're really going to want to fight and assert themselves because they haven't necessarily won their personal or professional battle yet.
Mm. And that's really insightful. I think that's a little bit of what I could relate to there, yeah. But it's interesting because as you say that, I feel like I think we could all categorize ourselves that way in different facets of life, like that somebody could feel like a statesman in the in one area. I don't know, maybe in faith and spirituality, but they're very much a warrior in the work that they're in, because they're just getting into it, or they're very, you know, they're still working through their identity on it. Yet, I just don't know how obvious that would be to people. I could imagine a lot of people saying, well, I'm a statesman on...
I know, they do. Yeah, they do.
This or this. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't like to think that, consider myself in that way either. But then I do sort of feel like there's definitely areas in my life that I feel way more developed on than others. So I have to believe at least that those are areas I've progressed more on. What was the first one? The athlete.
Okay. It's really when you just go, wow, I'm capable. I can do stuff. I can do anything. And yeah, I'll try that and I'll try that. And it's just a full participation in life. And it's like me when I tried to, you know, experiment with all religions. I was like, yeah, this is fascinating. And then eventually, you know, you choose one that you go, all right, this is where I'm going to apply myself, you know, in professionally as well. And I think the difference with the statesman is, the statesman doesn't really feel like they've got anything to prove. They go, no, I've sort of got the runs on the board in that area, but and I can see you wanting to get the runs on the board, and I'm more than happy to help you and teach you, but I don't really feel like I need the runs on the board in that. And, you know, even with spirituality and faith, I feel so comfortable where I'm at on that stuff. I'm always looking for mentors. I'm always looking for somebody who's further down the journey than me, but I don't feel like I have to shove my worldview down someone else's throat anymore in my own journey to feel, you know, to in that warrior state to approve myself. And even with professionally, I don't, like, you know, I say you before, you got a boring job, you know, you're so established in your career that it's just not true. It's like it can be joked about, but someone when they're younger, you know, you'd go, well, hang on, I'm really trying. I think this is a good industry. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a different shift.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, to continue this listening thing, I had an interesting experience of that this week. I was in a couple of epic conversations, and the person I was in the conversation with, she listens differently than I listen. In that I'll say something and she won't respond. She'll just listen to that. Now, as soon as I enjoy the conversation, so as soon as I find silence very, very difficult, and it's not from some childhood emotional baggage. We've all got a nature. And so I enjoy the chatter. That's why we're on air, right? If I didn't enjoy chatter, we wouldn't be having a podcast. I said, well, what are your thoughts on that? Because I really enjoy to communicate an idea and then hear your view on it. Because when I hear your view, I'm going, oh, do they understand it? Or can I understand myself more? Because I know who I am in relationship to your idea. But I said that to her and she says, has nobody really listened to you before? I'm like, yeah, I just like the idea. Like, I like to hear what your thoughts are. Like, because I don't know if you don't speak or communicate in response to that idea, you could be thinking about something completely different and I've bored you, you know, like, or I've missed the boat. Like, it's, you know, in relationship, you communicate. But if you reverse that, that means that there's probably times when her or someone with her nature is speaking and then I give my thoughts on it and they would just prefer it if I had just sat with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know when you listen to a guy and you listen to a girl, it's different. Like, I know when I listen to girls, my job is just to listen longer. As soon as I think it's time to speak, it's really not. I don't mean to generalize like that, but we've all got these different natures and a different way that we want it packaged. But it was an interesting question because one of the things I'd done on a program many years ago, I used to run a program called Aspire, which is now going to be an audio program, but it's a 4-day Get Your Life Sorted Out program. But there's an advanced one. Well, you remember Aspire, right? But the advanced...
I helped found it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it really grew and blossomed, wouldn't you?
You're such a great life coach, mate.
Yeah, it's. Oh, I couldn't get
thanks
you.
Thanks for helping me develop
your boring job. Yeah, but with it's a shame though with Aspire that you didn't actually get to see it at its booming best because it grew into something really remarkable, quite different to what you know in the early days. But nonetheless, after that, there was also the Limitless program, and on that, I ran a workshop. You might remember. Did you go on Limitless, Mick, or not? Okay. Anyway, what we did, we ran it out at Listerfield Exilium College, you might remember. And we go up on the top of this hill, and all the kids were in groups of about four or five, I think it was, probably four. And on the first day, you just had to talk for 5 minutes. You had 5 minutes, you had the floor, and the other three people would listen. And at the end of that 5 minutes, nobody was allowed to say anything. It was just someone else's turn to just talk for 5 minutes. And then the next day, everybody talked for 10 minutes. And the next day, everybody talked for 15 minutes. Nobody says anything. Nobody says, oh, that was really interesting. That was great. Or clap or anything. You just hand the floor to the next person. Silence. And on the fourth day, before they went, I said, guys, this is what's going to happen now. You may not be aware of it, but you've been playing a record. When we speak, we just regurgitate stuff that we've learnt to say. That if we say this, people generally like us, or we think that they like us. We think this is our conversation tool to get through, you know, to get through life. We play a record. So what you're going to do today is that you still get 15 minutes allocated to you, but this time everybody else is going to explain to them how they felt when you were talking. What emotions did they have? You know, what was going through their head? And it was really confronting. But what was happening is that they were getting the feedback, not as an immediate response to their conversation. And the feedback was extraordinary. There's some people who thought they were really interesting, and people saying, yeah, I just felt like you were just, like you're just trying to show off to us, or I just sort of felt a bit bored. Or, and there's other times where people were really talking, they thought they were boring, and people were like, I just couldn't stop listening to you. Like, that was mesmerizing, and I couldn't believe how honest you were. And people got this huge level of feedback because two things have been set up. One, you've been given the opportunity to speak, but two, people have been told not to speak in response, to just listen. And then the third part of that was then to get that information later. I think when I had this conversation this week, that I was almost experiencing what I'd created for those other people, but no one had ever been in a position to facilitate that for me. And, you know, when she was saying, well, you know, does people not listen to you before? I was like, yeah, people listen. But I think I was going into an uncharted territory. What if I just say it and I just accept that it's out there? You know, it doesn't just accept it. Yeah, it was totally, totally different. And I'm not sure if it's healthy or unhealthy or good or bad, or I've got no idea, but it was just a cool experience about the topic of listening. And I wonder if really, if she wanted to be a better listener for me as a customized listener, if she could stretch herself and go, oh, well, or not stretch, but, you know, say, oh, and comment where she thought, you know, I wouldn't want to comment. Or do I need to go on the journey and not have that, just have raw silence at the end and just accept that? I don't know. It was just really interesting when it came up.
So was that how you carried on the whole conversation? Like, it was just generally, was it just you talking?
No, it wasn't, but I can out-talk most people, so it was a little one-sided, but there was just a couple of real pivotal moments where I noticed myself almost feeling vulnerable because I'd spoken and I wasn't getting any feedback and going, does that, you know, like you and I always say to each other, does that make sense? Do you get it? You know, and,
yeah,
you know, and well, I was sort of doing that and they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, how can I know that? You know?
Yeah, well, you develop your thoughts with people I do. I know you probably do as well. That's how I shape my experience, how I shape discussions. I was recently in a meeting with a whole bunch of people where there's sort of sharing of opinions, and I was one of the first up, and I realized that was a dumb thing for, like, I should have just said, I'm going to wait. But that would be kind of lame. But just as like, I realized how important it is for me to, like, I don't have that sort of sense of what's going on in, like, where people are at on an issue. I actually physically need to hear from them to get a true sense of what's going on. So I rely heavily on the spoken word and action. I can't interpret thought any other way. It's really difficult for me to just try to read somebody. And so I would imagine being quite confronted in the same situation you're talking about, probably for different reasons, though, because I'd be completely unsure of what that person's thinking.
Yeah, which I was. And you and I are always interested in growing. So maybe there's a part of me going, hey, yeah, Mark, just hold that uncertainty. Or maybe there's another part of me, you know, that says, well, not maybe a part of me, but or maybe another way for that to play out is them actually coming to the party in a listening style that suits me more. I don't care. Like, I was just curious. Like, I just noticed this topic of listening. It's not as straightforward, is it? Like, the fact that you listened and then it was unfulfilled, you know, I was being listened to, but I didn't feel listened to.
I do remember when I was doing stuff like Aspire with you and we're sort of just in a lot of discussions with people walking through problems, like sometimes fairly significant ones. And I do remember the first few times where I was put in that position of responsibility where like somebody was genuinely offloading some pretty massive stuff to me and were looking for help. They weren't just like venting, because it was clear they vented to many people, have had counseling, have had all these things. They were somehow thinking something was going to come out. And I do kind of remember this process of feeling like, I don't know what to tell them. I don't know what the answer is, but I did learn this process of, if I just keep listening, the patterns will emerge, like it'll just become obvious. And it just always seemed to, which leads me a little bit to this seeking first to understand, then to be understood. I kind of feel like maybe that really applies more to conflict resolution of something that's like where you're not seeing eye to eye and it's come to a head. And I think that was the intent in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I think that was really talking about, like, he was like, oh, that's a habit of highly effective people for sure. But I think it's a habit in positions of conflict.
Or seeking to be aligned. Yeah. Look, I had with a client yesterday where he said he wanted to be on the team of this executive mob. And I said, well, if you want to be on that team, you've got to understand them. And he goes, I do understand them. I'm like, no. They understand each other at a different level, and you don't really necessarily understand the complexities of the goals and targets they have. You might understand them, but not all the subtleties, not all the other things that are going on. And I think that's a lot like the example I often use is when I drilled a hole in the top of my thumb a couple of years ago, and just the drill popped off, broke the nail, was black as, hurt like hell. But it took nearly a year to grow out. And the amount of attention I got for this black dot on my thumb was unbelievable. But it only hurt for the first 2 weeks. After that, it was fine. But I got nearly a year's worth of attention. Now, my back was a mess. I used to just get up out of bed and just like it be at 45 degrees as I walked to the shower and have to hold myself up against the wall in the shower because my back was stuffed. My Achilles was just hell. But nobody knew. And so if I tell someone, oh, my back hurts, oh, yeah, but they see the black dot. They'd be like, oh, your thumb. Are you okay? And it was so frustrating because I was telling them a truth. I was telling them my truth. And that's what I was saying to him. If he wants to really be part of that team, he really needs to understand the subtleties, the complexities, and what they lose sleep over. You know, what is it that they're worried about? Maybe there's something privately going on. You know, people at different ages have got different problems. You know, somebody later, say 60 onwards, is dealing with different health issues or letting go of their sexual potency, or they're letting go of their physical prowess. They're worried about their finances or their grandkids or their children, you know, that perhaps aren't as stable and still need them, compared to the kid that's 25 that is really just worried about getting, you know, a part-time job so they can get enough cash to take off overseas again. It's got totally different worries. But we need to understand the complexities and the subtleties if he wants to be on that team. And I say that too, like, there's another book that I haven't released, but in it, I opened the question, I said, with about teenagers, I said, who are the top five people that your teen thinks understands them? Because that's who they're listening to.
Your teenager, you mean?
Yeah, the teenagers. Yeah. And if you think, even with your own personal finances, you know, who are the top, you know, three people that you think understand your business and financial position? Well, they're the ones that you're going to listen to for advice. rather than the person that comes in and has a full-time income with another employer and has had a house paid for by their parents and lives in the country in the same town where they grew up, and they give you advice on your finances, you go, I'm sorry, I can't hear a word you're saying because you don't get my world. You're not even coming from a space of understanding. That's a question I pose to parents. I'm like, who understands your child? Because that's who they're listening to.
Yeah, that's the positioning thing, right? That's what we've talked about this topic before on the podcast as an episode, but that's what you're talking about, right? Is like the how's that influence being framed?
No.
Who are they allowing to frame? Well, it's not quite in the example of like who is your teen listening to. Perhaps that's not a positioning statement so much as what you were talking about previous to that was like when you're in a discussion with somebody and you're paying attention to them.
Yeah. Yes.
Because
yes.
They're in the same situation as you. There's a little bit of positioning in that if the person is not in the same position as you, they kind of need to listen enough.
Yes. Yes.
To be in your position or empathize with your position enough to be understood, vice versa.
Yeah, because, yeah, that's true.
And so I guess it's probably a little bit of that reciprocation of like when that doesn't take place, I think there's frustration that develops there. And I think that's obviously the marker of great human relationships is when that takes place, it helps, both people feel like this is going to work. But sometimes I feel like it can be, like you said in the earlier example of being in a bar, like you do the groundwork of listening and being respectful, and it actually has unintended consequences of like, it's not going well, I need to escape. And the other person's like, wow, we're going to keep doing business together. We should date. We should like connect again. It's interesting because other times it's just not even required. And I'm, meaning like it's a subconscious thing. It just happens. You don't even have to think about it. You can just enter into a conversation 12 hours later. You're like, oh my God, what just happened? Like we're still exploding on this issue. We've covered a lot of ground. We've listened to each other. We don't want to exit the conversation.
It was interesting listening back to the podcast that we did, or that I did with Pete and Jess.
Mm.
Because I said to Sarah ages ago, can you listen to one of our shows? And she said, I don't think you and Mick listen to each other. And I think that sometimes when I've listened back, she's right, that because we've got an idea in our head that we're keen to spit out maybe, or we're, at some level we're aware that it's recording. But anyway, I listened back to that episode and I just thought the contributions from Jess and Pete were just exceptional, and I thought the things that I said were just stupid, like, or just wordy or missing the point. But I was also concerned I wasn't listening, really listening. And one of the things that I've learned to do, and I don't do it all the time, but I seek to do because it feels so healthy, is that sometimes when somebody's saying something, it's easy to think that they remind you of a story or something to contribute. So you hold that idea and you wait till they finish and then you go, oh, here's my story or here's what I want to say. But it's based on the opening of their conversation. So I've learned now the awareness of, and I don't always do it, but I seek to, and that is to as soon as I think I need to say something, just wait until they're finished and see what I instinctively want to say when they're finished, because there might be something else that is a better match to that complete thought. And sometimes when we're listening, we're not listening, we're waiting. We're just waiting so that we can say the idea that popped up. And I think that we've been guilty of it. I've been guilty.
Sure, absolutely. And I feel like this is a training session sometimes for listening, and it's in a unique way that's unique to any other position in life, and that is because there's no room for extended silence here. So I don't have to worry about that too much here, but I've certainly noticed that doing my own podcast, it's been much more challenging than here. But when we first started this project, I definitely was aware of the fact that you were going to finish your thought soon. And if I didn't have something to follow up with, it was going to get awkward, even though it wouldn't in real life for us. It wouldn't take more than 2 to 3 seconds before you would say, Mickey, you're still there. And
but I would though, because that's
exactly
true. That's true. Yeah.
And this has probably already happened before. And I've noticed that with you, me and ML, when we've done a recording together, sometimes like I didn't have a thought and one of you guys said to me, what do you think, Mick? And I was like, I don't think anything. I was just listening. And I then had to, I did this a couple of times in relationships. You guys asked me, and I had nothing to say at the point. I was just listening. And I could feel it in my voice. And I remember distinctly at the time I had nothing to say and I just had to fill space and it felt shit when I did it. But I just did it and I was like, I was listening back to it thinking, you should have just said, I have nothing to add. But I was fearful of doing that because that would make you guys probably feel like you need to now fill that gap. Like I was like, just, it would just feel like a game of tennis where I'm like, no, it's back in your court. Like I don't want responsibility for the conversation. And there's that level of responsibility here to take on. It's interesting though, isn't it?
It's so interesting. And I agree. If you, when there's that silence, well, actually there's a few thoughts on this. Like one is it'd be interesting if we really did have allow the silence and not feel like you had to speak, because then we'd probably have a more sincere conversation, even for listeners, that there is silence and maybe that they're thinking as well. Like I know when I just read my book Rise Above and I deliberately, there's some questions that I pose and I left pauses after the questions. So that it wasn't just this bombarding list. There was this sense of, you know, you could just go, yeah, well, what is my answer to that? But you can't live too long because then they're like, yeah, come on. Either way. Anyway, the other thing is that the conversation I was having this week too, your nature is very similar to hers. So when I throw out all these, you know, we're just chatting about like everything from, you know, just literally everything. And I go, what do you think? Her answer is, oh, I'm just listening. And I'm like, oh, you know, because I probably less have that experience of not knowing. I just process differently. So it's interesting hearing you say that. And on the air too, if you had have been silent, Mel and I, yeah, we would just feel like the energy stopped because the chatter is energy for us.
But if you imagine the three of us were sitting in a room having the conversation, if you two were on a train of thought or you were, you'd just continue with that train of thought. And I'd just be sitting on the couch and I'll just say something when I'm ready to say something. Or, you know, the third person would, but it's pretty rare that you're going to like just take a break and then turn to me and go, what do you think, Mick? Like, unless it's been like an extended period of time and you wonder if I'm even mentally present anymore. But, you know, and so, but that, those things are part of just doing an audio, you know, recording and all of that. But I wouldn't say that I always feel that way. Like I do often have a thought and I totally related to what you said earlier about like, I've got a thought and I'm holding on to that. And I'm not listening to what you're saying fully because I'm trying to just make sure that thought doesn't exit my brain so that I've got something to say when you're done. And I don't think there's a great difference between when we do that on a podcast and one in real life, because that thought enters my head. And what I'm thinking about intently is maintaining that thought so it doesn't escape and I'm just waiting for you to finish, partly listening. I think that's true of a lot of situations.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be – and I've found I've had way better conversations once I've done that, especially, you know, when somebody tells a story and so everybody starts getting their story ready because I've got a funny story on that topic and I've got a funny story on that topic and then you end up just listening to stories, not actually having a conversation. And sometimes the stories are fun, but there's other times where
I know what you mean.
We're just all listening. Yeah, we're just waiting to tell it. So I just think that it's been really healthy for me. I've loved it. Like it's changed and I've changed the things that I've said. It changes the direction the conversation goes. And it's been a really big thing to just go, oh, just wait, Mark. Just understand before you really comment and speak and contribute. Because, and I would do that with my clients. When I'm working with clients, I'm way better at it. Because I know if I don't understand, I can't give the right advice. But socially, it's easy just to jump into, oh, we're just hanging out. So I don't have to listen properly. I don't have to listen to you. Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. Sometimes I definitely fall into that trap. It's good training, yeah.
It's a good idea. It's a good little model. It's a good little tool. It's been good for me. Okay, I've got a question for you then. If you were in that situation where you had that conversation and the person was chatting away like they were, and you're in the situation again, how would you handle it differently? Yes, it's weird, isn't it? Because you're like, well, we don't know yet.
Yeah, oh my goodness, it's like a conversation that covered so much freaking ground that I don't even know that I came away knowing what this person does or anything. But I guess it would have been, perhaps I would have sat back and listened for a lot longer at the outset. And then as I'm listening, I guess I would have tried to figure out what would be the most effective question for me to ask. Because I feel like in hindsight, most of my responses, although not as frequent in discussion as the other person was, the responses were opinions or, but what about this? Or have you thought of that? Or like, you know, I'm just developing the thought pattern that was taking place, developing the discussion when perhaps it might have been more effective to just listen for a lot longer, like 10 minutes, and then finally figure out what the right question to ask might have been that would actually, I don't know if that's right though. I can't imagine myself genuinely doing that. But
I think what you said just then about the what question to ask is really crucial, because I'd want to know what someone's purpose on the planet, why they're doing this, why? Because I just want to get the essence of it. And I learned that when I was young, I was hanging out, I was running a program for Bob and Jane Toll in America, and they're billionaires. And both of them were self-made and then got married. And he owns Toll Industries, which people in the States were probably familiar with. They call him Mr. McMansion and stuff because he's built all the big homes.
But Toll Brothers, yeah.
Yeah. And so Bob, he just kicked my ass. Like, I was probably 24 when I was running programs for them, and I'd say something and it was broad. And he's so educated, so smart, so sophisticated, and so world-class that people at a world-class level have greater clarity. It's like when you record the kids' running race and you just can sort of point to the kids. You're first, you're second, you're third. Later on, you use a stopwatch, and when you get the Olympics, it's within a hundredth of a second. It's measured in more, it's more accurate. And I've found that sometimes when you're in a conversation like that, although somebody can be perceived from the outside as being really well thought through and clear, the truth is you've probably got much more clarity in many areas than they do on that particular topic. And so as soon as you recognize that someone might be a junior because they've got less clarity in this area, that's where sometimes I'll go straight in with a more important question. I go, well, hang on, what are you actually? I'll go straight to that question. But that means that sometimes I've had to actually stop the conversation and say, and it's tricky to do it because it's still a bit of a confrontation, especially if they've positioned themselves as if they're an authority or they don't want to let you see them as having any kind of incompetency. But I'll usually try to go, hey, listen, if we step back for a second, you know, this is what I really want to know is this. And I'll show an example. And I go, do you really have you got any clarity around that? And then I'll usually have to, but like you said, ask a new question. But I've usually got to stop that train. I wouldn't listen. No, I do listen for a long time. I'm not going to waste my time, but I do find I have to go in with that. And like an example, or an extreme, years and years ago, a kid on a program was, everybody was just having such a great time, and he was just never really fitting in. And he came up to me and he's like, oh, the program's been amazing. You know, I learned so much. He goes, it's just a shame about my knee. You know, I can't play soccer at the level I want to play because of my knee. And he was just going on. And it was the last part of the program. Like, the mood was great. And I said, he just kept on going on about it. And I said, yeah, mate, I can't talk to you now. And, you know, anyway, he just kept on going on. And I said, mate, sit down. So we sat down and I said, nobody cares about your fucking knee. And he was shocked. And I was like, mate, have you noticed that every time you're in a conversation, people start to leave that group? And I said, there is so much good stuff going on here. I said, you are so funny. People find you so interesting. But all you want to do is bitch and whine about your knee and no one cares about your fucking knee. So don't talk to me about it. Don't talk to anyone else about it. I want you to go over those people and enjoy hanging out with them, listen to them, and be as funny as you can at the right opportunities. Don't discuss your fucking knee. So this was me having to interrupt, you know, because I was done listening to this. It had been days of him being like this and no one had ever given him the feedback. Now, it can sound horrific. You know, there'll be some people out there that just go, that's completely wrong. And, you know, that's not how you got to do it. And like, you know, I knew this kid. I knew what I was dealing with. And he'd been a very loving, supportive environment a long time. And I continued to be that more so because I was brave enough to tell this child the thing that was that damaging them socially. And so he came back the next day, a completely changed person, such good energy. And he's like, mate, I just had the best night. He said, just thanks. I didn't even know. He goes, I didn't even know. I feel like, you know, if we go back to your example. It's like, yeah, I'm going to listen, but there's going to be a point where I'm also going to say, mate, I love you. And because I love you, I'm prepared to say the difficult thing. And I'm not going to say it out of, yeah, sure, maybe I'm annoyed, but I'm not going to do it because I don't like you or I hate you. I'm doing it because I love you and you're frustrating me because I can see something else in you. But, you know, I was really clear to direct that kid where to put his energy. And that's helpful because nobody wants to be told, you crap at that, stop it. Because they go, what do you want? What do I do instead, though? You know, and they're tricky. That's tricky, that stuff. Like, but you sort of wait. Like, but that was one of those things. I didn't plan. I just got to a point where I was just done. I was like, mate.
You know, well, you're also clearly in a mentoring role. Like, you're clearly you've not just like arrived at the statesman position, just like sometimes, even though you might not be the statesman, like if you're in hanging out with the likes of whatever, Bob Toll, you're not the statesman anymore, even on the same topic or the same issue. But, you know, you're hanging out with the 13, 15 year old, it's completely different. You're almost assumed that you need to have that leadership. And so I feel like it's a bit easier to manage that stuff, but a little less easy when you're with either a peer or just somebody that, yeah, you've just met for the first time and you're really on equal ground and you don't have that long trust or that ability to sort of reset the framework or finally be honest or whatever. It's just like you're like taken aback sometimes with certain conversations and things like that where I don't know. And so in some ways, you know, when you're asking what would I do differently, I just don't know that there's a whole lot that I would do differently. I don't feel like it was a bad conversation. It wasn't a bad meeting. It was still productive. We achieved an outcome, all of those things. But I just sort of felt like I tried hard and it just didn't quite connect. And I was like, well, you know, I would just give it space to continue to sort of work through because I would just let that person, you know, absorb whatever it is that we discussed and see if they come back differently the next time. Mm.
You definitely don't need to get it right. I'm just curious if we look and because sometimes you just have those experiences just for the sense of contrast, because then you go and hang out with someone else where it's easier and you recognize that it's easier and just that awareness means that you go, oh, so this is a potential relationship, you know, whatever level or type, but where this one is, we're not really a match here. We're not aligned.
Mm. Mm. That's good stuff.
So anyway, I think that's enough for today, Mick.
I think it is, mate. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with me today. I'm really...
No worries. But if you just can get onto that invoice as soon as possible, that'd be great. And we'll do the same time next week, all right? So let's just work on those things. Yeah. And let's see how you go, you know. I want to be really proud of you by next week. Really, really proud of the progress you're making.
Great. I'm sending the invoice now. So.
Yeah, for those people who haven't heard earlier episodes, Mick's bloody automated service sends out emails to his database for people who follow Sustainercast, and he's typed my name in as dickhead. So I get these emails that go, hey, dickhead. And it hurts every time. And I take screenshots of it and go, Mick, can you change my damn name? And he just thinks it's funny. He's not listening at all. You're not listening to me. That hurts my feelings.
See you later, Mark.
Yeah. That's enough for today. Bye.
All right, mate. I'll talk to you next week, Dave. See you later, everybody.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news, and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.